Well, we're closing out our series today on Inside Out. We're looking at the vision of Crossroads. God has a vision, a plan for every local church. All the local churches are supposed to be different. And so we're not saying Crossroads is better or beyond, just different. We're trying to drill down into who we are and what we are about. When I say we, there's all different perspectives in here, all different spiritual orientations, but some of us really get it and are going that direction. And so we're trying to inform some of us who don't know that and encourage others of us who are just going in that direction. In the first week, we looked at outside in, what it was like to have outsiders, people outside any church involvement who are normal seeking friends. If they come inside a quote-unquote church environment, we want to speak their language, our language. We want it to be interesting. We want to value where all of us are in our spiritual journey, and we make accommodations at Crossroads for that. In the second week, we looked at inside in. When we're all here, we don't want to just sit here and inhabit a seat. We need to grow. And if we're not growing spiritually, then something is wrong. And that's why we have different growth opportunities for us. Last week, we looked at things in Mumbai and other things that are happening outside here that are official Crossroads initiatives. We want to focus. We're a focused army to bless and love on our world. And there's all kinds of things that are happening. Because we're getting stronger in here, we're doing stronger and more incredible things out there, whether it's more kids tutoring in Cincinnati or more girls being rescued from sex slavery in India and rehabilitated and loved on. Today, to end it out, we're going to talk about outside out. Things that are happening out there that have nothing to do with Crossroads. Only in that they're Crossroads people that are doing things out there, and there's some encouragement and some life that you tend to receive when hopefully you're around our community. And so the first person I want to interact with a little bit on that is Brett Sims. Let's welcome him up on stage. Brett Sims, yes. All righty, Brett. Man, you haven't been to 10 o'clock service for a while, have you, I bet?
No, that's because I'm a part of the team that launched Mason Crossroads. So
yes, how good is that? Mr. Mason, wonderful. And you got a unique role up in Mason. Tell us about your role.
Yes, I've been blessed with the opportunity to lead Whiz Kids for Crossroads Mason up there at the Mason Heights Elementary School. And we're going to be launching October 12th, same time that it's down here, and really looking toward the opportunity to really invest in the kids up there, because poverty up in Mason, and Lakota and places Westchester and that isn't what you see other places. I mean, most of the time when people think of poverty, they think of over the Rhine or they think of South Africa. But, you know, poverty's poverty. And a lot of times it can be more difficult in the suburb areas because people think that where the money is, poverty doesn't exist. And when we kind of expressed to people that what we were doing, it was like, in all honesty, people weren't being mean, but they were like, oh, so being poor in Mason means you live in a $400,000 home, or, you know, your kid doesn't have a Beamer.
Four bedrooms instead of five bedrooms.
Exactly. And it's like, no, it's like this summer it was really clear when we did the ESL lunches for some children up there. Half of them had never had McDonald's. Some of them, when we gave them macaroni and cheese and hot dogs, they were amazed. They thought the people were rich who actually cooked their food, because they don't cook food. They have to go to 7-Elevens and stores like that. That's where they get their food. They don't go to grocery stores because they can't drive and they can't go places. So, you know, we have a real calling up there.
Now, you have a heart for this because of your background. Talk about your background.
Okay. I grew up south of the river, which Ohioans don't want to pretend
Kentucky
exists.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for wearing a shirt today.
Well, I put my teeth in on the way, too. But
we are an equal opportunity offender here. Everybody gets it eventually, so go ahead.
But I grew up over in Erlanger, you know, not that far from here. And but, you know, like I was explaining in Mason, I mean, you know, We were poor, but people around you don't know it because, you know, you don't necessarily live in the whole environment like that. But we really didn't have any money. And the hardest thing about being poor, though, wasn't the lack of things. It was the way that people treated you, especially adults. They devalued you. They judged your character, who you are, if you have integrity, whether they think you're a thief, whether they think you're clean. Everything. So even as a child, it's like I remember being, you know, judged all the time because of my parents' financial situation. And
Couldn't go to parties.
Couldn't go to parties. You know, people were like, well, in all honesty, it was like, well, I know he's not going to have money to buy a gift, so do we really want him on the list? Or, well, you know, if something's missing, it must have been that Sims kid, you know. And so it was, you know, it was really hard. And you're not, as a child, people reminding you basically that you're useless because you don't have money is what hurts more than anything.
The story that rocked my world the most was how you were trying to keep the family warm one winter.
Yes. Back in the late 70s, for people that are from Cincinnati, if you remember, we had all those snowstorms around 76, 77, and then it seemed like the 2 years after that, it got pretty cold here. And what happened was that my parents had been divorced, and I was at home with my mom and my siblings, and we didn't have any money to really pay for the heating bill. And my mom was able to work it out with Cincinnati Gas and Electric to keep the heat on, but she had to keep it below a certain dollar value or they would shut it off. And so what happened was for us to be able to do that, I had to go out at night. I chose to. I'm not proud of it, but I went and stole lumber and pallets from behind stores to break up and railroad ties and all of that because we had to have something to heat the house. And then it got to the point where actually we had to break up our furniture, some of our furniture to burn in the fireplace. And it was, like I explained to you, the worst part was it wasn't even all that. It was trying to get up Monday through Friday and go to school and during the nights, watch over your brothers and sisters and hope that they don't die of freezing.
Because it was your responsibility, no man in the house.
Nope, I have to keep that fire going.
Man, so a lot of great things must have happened because now you have a great job in corporate America with a large company here in Cincinnati. Has two initials. Procter & Gamble, P&G. And the reason I started interacting with you is I got an email from you several months ago. I love emails, especially when they're encouraging and talks about people's life being changed. And you, well, I'll just read your email, portion of your email. You sent me this email, here's what it said. During a sermon, you made the statement that if we weren't about building God's kingdom, then we weren't about building our own, and God's kingdom was love. I've been having real issues with a coworker that was really a nasty woman. Bad mama jamma. She did things that could have gotten her fired, and no one seemed to like her and walked on eggshells around her. So my boss came to me and said they were going to fire her, but they needed my okay so that everyone was in agreement. I had all the documented proof. She wasn't a nice person. I had all my friends and peers telling me to get rid of her because I was justified. It felt good to have the power and know that I could crush her and that I would be seen as doing everyone a favor. Then God showed up in your words that Sunday. Monday morning when I woke up, I knew exactly what I had to do. So what did you do when you went into this meeting?
Well, first thing I did is I remembered the words that you had said during that sermon, which was, you know, you're either building God's kingdom or you're building your own kingdom. And regardless of the excuse you give yourself, if it's not about love, it's not about God. And so when I woke up that morning, I was like, you know, I really need to go talk to this woman. So got in early, sat there, said a little prayer. It's just, you know, Lord, when I meet with her today, let her hear your words from my lips, not what I have to say, but what you need her to hear. And so she came in the room. She was all tense. She was ready to go at it, you know, because she was aware of the situation and what was. And so she was ready for me to basically say, hey, it's been great. Have a good life. And then go party and tell everybody, I'm the man. I did it. But I basically sat down, and when she walked in, I looked her in the eye, and I told her, I said, I have to ask for your forgiveness. I have to ask that you forgive me for the way that I have sinned against you, for the way that I have treated you, for the way that I have devalued you. You know, I said, you're a human being, and I am not the one to give you value. Your value has already been given to you when Christ died for you. You're his child. There is nothing more valuable than being a child of God. And then I just continued to tell her I was sorry.
That's an amazing concept. Yeah, you can clap for him. That's an amazing concept that, you know, if you own a home, if you do, what's your house worth? It's worth whatever someone will pay for it. It's not worth the appraisal 2 years ago or even the appraisal now. It's whatever somebody will pay for it. And so our value, your value as a human, is what God would pay for you. That's his son. That's the value that you have. And so you said this to her. What was her response?
Instant just flood of tears. Just for a woman that had been so strong and perceived as being the ruling iron fist, you know, in the group, she completely fell apart. And what she basically did was share that she grew up in a household with her dad was in the military, so she was never good enough. She got married, was never good enough for her husband. Her husband was actually abusive to her and her son, to the point that she actually had to hide her son from him. And just that no one had ever told her, just, you matter. And that's all she needed to hear. And, you know, she just completely fell apart and shared that.
So that was 4 months ago. That wasn't like 2 weeks ago. You had a nice thing 4 months ago. What about now? How's she doing now?
It's one of those things where it was a remarkable turnaround. She has completely changed her life, and it's so simple that just by telling her that she was valued, she's leading a project. It's a very important project. She has people now that used to run and hide from her coming up to her and smiling and greeting her in the morning.
Amazing.
She's a completely different person.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Let me tell you why I'm excited about that. That's what we're talking about today. WizKids is an outside official Crossroads thing. This is not. That's not showing up on an org chart. That's not on a budget line item. That's just a normal person in here getting transformed from a message of love, going out and loving on the world. And where else are we going to get that message? Who's going to give us that? The government going to give us that message? The Bengals going to give us that message? who's going to give us that message? That is just an astounding, astounding thing, Brett, for you to go do. And it's the kind of stuff we want to see more happen. We're going to start calling that out today.
Yeah, and I just want to say real quick that, you know, we all have coworkers, family members, or friends that, you know, I believe that people are good, and that a lot of times when they're really, you have that friction in that, if we can take a moment and step back and say, you know what, maybe they're not feeling valued. Maybe
yeah, and
I need
sometimes
to show
as
love.
A leader, you do value somebody, you do love them, and it's still right to terminate them. You know, sometimes that needs to happen. At Crossroads, I mean, we fire people here. You should all feel good about that who give, because, you know, we want to have an honest day's labor. And sometimes when someone's loved and valued and built into, they're not giving and building in as people are paying them to and giving to. And something like that has to happen. But it's from the overall perspective of loving, building into, and being Jesus to everybody. Hey, awesome. Let's thank Brett for being here, doing what he's doing.
Right now.
Thanks, man.
That's great. Great. Man, how good is that? There's something that warms inside of our heart when we hear about somebody who's given love that they weren't expecting, and their life turns around. We want to applaud that. A simple decision like that. How many simple decisions could happen inside this room that could affect lives all across the region? It's why we clap. It's what gets us fired up. It's also why there's human interest stories in the media. The media has human interest stories because we're interested in this message of love, which traces to who Jesus is. That's basically the bread and butter of Oprah. That's why she's a runaway success. People have some communication of love that just sort of inspires. Let's take a look at one of her shows that didn't air too long ago.
As a young boy in Haiti, John Robert Cadet says he grew up as a Restivik, the Creole word for an unpaid domestic servant or child slave.
In Haiti, I was the first to get up in the morning and the last to go to bed at night. From the minute I woke up, the chores never stopped. I clear the table after they ate. And if there's some leftover food, that's what I ate.
In a country where more than 300,000 children are sold into slavery by their parents, John Robert says his white father abandoned him after his mother died. John Robert says many of these Restivik children are so neglected they don't even have names.
I don't know when I was born. I don't know my age. I never had a name.
When he was about 15, John Robert's owners moved to the United States. With no way to survive on his own, he followed them and says he continued to be a slave in America.
They loaned me that name in order for me to come to the United States to be a slave for them in their homes in New York.
When they were told it was against the law to keep minors out of school, a door opened for John Robert.
The owners had no choice but to send me to school. I registered under their last name.
This boy, with no real name, went on to become a husband, father, and teacher, using his voice to speak for hundreds of thousands of Haitian child slaves.
I cannot recall a time when I was not a domestic slave.
I like to share the story with young people. That gives me some hope. All I can do is share their story, write their story, knock on doors. I have not found the right one, but I will keep on knocking.
Brett was, yeah, that's cool, isn't it? Brett was a part of our team, is a part of our team. Let's welcome another person who's a part of our team, Jean Robert Cadet, and also Joan Kahn. Let's bring them on up. Oh, Joan, all righty. Well. You're getting a standing ovation. You haven't even said anything. My goodness.
Well, thank you.
Oh, man. What's happened with Brett and what's happening with you all, as we're going to unpack, is a principle found in the book of Philippians, where it talks about labor. It says this in Philippians chapter 2. It says, if I am to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Fruitful labor. Oftentimes, the closer people get to God, the more they think they're supposed to go work on a church staff someplace. Or they're supposed to, like, go naked and move to Africa or something like that. No, stay in your current job and please keep your clothes on. This is about noticing that where you are on the outside there, you can have an impact. And so Brett's had an impact, and you are having an impact. But before we talk about the impact of the nonprofit that you two are working on together, tell us first about how'd you get to this place called Crossroads.
Well, I had met Joan. She asked me to come here to her church, and I hated churches. I didn't even believe in God. One reason is because as a child slave in Haiti, I was never allowed to go to church. I was owned by a voodoo priestess, and once a month she would send me, she would wake me up at midnight and give me a bowl of sacrificial food for me to go put at a crossroad.
And not then, a crossroad multi-site no, not, heyday, Haiti, yeah, but just a crossroads.
Just
the old,
a
old-fashioned
yeah,
kind.
Just a crossroad, yes, old-fashioned kind. And she would warn me, and she said, if you eat some of this food, the voodoo gods will kill you. And then after a while, I noticed that dogs would come and eat the food, and nothing happened to them. So so I would eat the food. But going back to Joan, she asked me to come to a church, and I said, no, I give her all kind of excuses for not coming. And eventually, she promised me breakfast after church. I couldn't pass this up, and I came. She picked me up, and I came by myself, married. We drove into the parking lot, and I thought, I didn't see a cross, and I thought, well, she was coming shopping first. Then I walked in, and there was people greeting people at the door, and there was free coffee, which I liked.
A bit different from what you expected.
Yeah, and then I came in, and it blew my mind. You were sandals and jeans and T-shirt, and then I listened. I got to listen to you, and then you were talking about keeping up with the Joneses, and I was blown away by that, and then the band was wonderful. And after church, she kept her promise. She took me to breakfast, and then I went home and told my wife, you have to come to this place, you have to, and she was shocked, because she knew I hated church, to go to church, and she said, well, if you want to go to church next week, we'll come together, and we've been coming since 2006.
That's cool, isn't it? Very, very cool. Welcome to the team. Welcome to the team. And Joan, how did you... Joan is also known by me affectionately as Joan of Go. Joan of Go, because Joan was the initiator and the initial backbone for Go Cincinnati. As a volunteer, she led that, in which now is an amazing movement. Many churches involved, thousands and thousands of people, the largest serving day in Cincinnati's history, keeps building every year, and it was on your back that happened the first 2 years. And how did you get to meet Jean Robert, what's going on here?
Well, I have to add to this. you know, after the church, the following week, she volunteered me to forgo Cincinnati. And I spent a whole Saturday, you know, painting school buildings. And then I realized something different. Something was different about this place, was that the building was not Crossroad. The people were Crossroad. You were Crossroad. I am Crossroad. She was Crossroad. And the people who come to this church are Crossroad. It's just a building. And I started to get involved, you know.
And we're the better for it.
Yeah.
Joan of Go, you looped him in. Talk about how you met JR, we'll call him.
I met Jean Robert through, we have a routine on Sundays where we come to Crossroads, and we go to First Watch, and then we go to Joseph Beth's bookstore and browse the bookstore. And so my daughter picked up a book there called Restavec and gave it to her father for Father's Day. And we all read the book and realized when we got to the end of the book that the author actually lived in Cincinnati. Not only did he live in Cincinnati, he lived 3 miles from my house. So I called him and asked him if he would come to lunch with us, and he did, and he told us a little about his story. We didn't believe when we read the book that it still existed today because we'd already been there working, and we didn't see these kids, but you don't see these children, and that's part of the problem. So Jean Robert went to Haiti with us, and...
And how Haiti? How did you get interested in Haiti?
Well, my husband and I loved to sail, and we were headed to Cuba. And so our boat captain was going to meet us in an...
Loved to sail, and your boat captain, so you got some jack.
Yeah, Brian.
Can we have the usher with the offering bag please come up for this?
Yeah, well, we do actually work for a living, Brian. Anyway... Boy, now I can't even think anymore. How do you deal with that, right?
As long as I'm having fun, that's all that matters. As long as I'm having fun.
So anyway, no one's immune up here. We were headed to Haiti, and our boat captain was meeting us on an island called Île Vache, which is just off the coast of La Caille. And because we'd traveled a lot, we didn't really check into Haiti and what that meant. But we got off the plane, and it was unlike anything we had ever experienced before, 9 years ago. So... The trip was about as far as from here to Lexington, and they had hired an English-speaking taxi driver for us and told him where to go. And when my husband started finding out what the cost was, he said, oh, that's just too much. You know, it's only a short trip. So he hired his own taxi driver, $50 less. We saved $50. And 9 hours later, we wound up in La Caille. So it was dark, and the taxi driver was putting us out on the street because in Haiti, people... start being fearful when it turns dark. And so he was pulling our luggage out, and I'm looking at my husband thinking, I'm getting a divorce. This is it. Anyway, so he, my husband's trying to figure out, okay, he's pretty calm and he handles most situations very well, but I could tell he was stressed, so that was making me very stressed. And there was a young man that came up, and he had a cell phone, which 9 years ago in Haiti, that was very rare. And he also spoke a little English. And so he called the island, and to make a long story short, they came and picked us up. But this young man, before we left, he asked for my husband's email address, and he never let us go. We were his lifeline, and my husband put him through school and paid for his college, paid for his mother's funeral. And so finally, my husband just said, look, I need somebody to vouch for you. And he put us in touch with a man in Kansas City. And the next thing we knew, my husband was on his way back to Haiti, and he asked me to go with him, and I said, no way, I'm not going back to Haiti. So he took my daughter, and so they came back, and both of them were so impacted by what had happened and said, you have to go. And so my whole family, we've all been involved there, and we started an English program in an area called Port Salut in the south, and then we met Jean Robert and became very interested in the Restavec issue. And
so you're partners now, and you have an organization that's trying to help and bless free Restavecs, Haitian slaves. And this is not a Crossroads thing. We got Go Cincinnati, Go Mumbai, Go the. There's no Go Haiti.
Yet.
But yet, this is something. yet this is something that we can all celebrate because Crossroads fingerprints are all over you all, blessing building into this. And this is just like Brett impacting his business world and his little management team that he's with. You guys are impacting Haiti, the world, and the infrastructure here is facilitating that happening. Anything else you want to build on that before we go to this next clip?
Absolutely. People here from Go Cincinnati, I built some of the most incredible relationships out of that first year of Go Cincinnati. This place was huge to me. After Go Cincinnati, it's just warm and intimate now. So, you know, the key to building relationships here is get involved in something. And those people have supported us. They provided tech support and website support and PR support and marketing and writing, everything you can imagine.
Just your normal networking of friendships around
yeah,
here.
Yeah, and they came along beside us and helped us with a national conference that we did in Haiti called Moisi Aititu, which is means I too am Haiti. Seven people traveled with us there. They turned this thing into the most amazing event. We call it Crossroads Style. It was so good that people came up to us afterwards. There was the head of the USAID was there, and she came up and she said, "This is unlike anything I've ever seen in Haiti, so obviously you guys don't need money." I'm going, "Oh, no. This was done by volunteers." So they were very impressed by that. And of course, we were encouraged and blessed and loved by that.
You guys are making a mark over there. CNN did a piece on them. Let's take a look at what happened with that.
Up on the mountain, Dina's owner, or aunt, as they're often referred to, says Dina is not a slave, but says she in fact wants to do all the chores herself.
Have you ever beaten her?
Yes, she says. When I send her to fetch the water and she stays too long, when she comes back, I whip her. When she goes to a friend of hers, I beat her. I beat her, so she will not do that again.
So you whip her and you beat her?
Yes, she says.
You make her kneel on a cheese grater?
When I put her on the cheese grater, I don't beat her, she says.
Do you show her love?
I speak with her. That's how I show her affection, she says.
And one of the things that really struck me, Jean Robert, was every child that you saw, you went up and you put your arms around them, you gave them a hug.
But yes, I have to. It's just like I'm looking at myself in that child. And I just wish somebody could have walked by and touch me, pat me in the head, say, "You're a nice kid. You shouldn't be doing that." And I want to give that to those kids.
Dina was 14 years old before anyone hugged her. It came from Cadet.
You see the pictures of Dina there, and she just looks soulless. She looks lifeless. Why is that? Talk to us about what it's like to be a slave.
To be a slave is that for a child to be a slave, you don't have a childhood because you have to do every chore imaginable. You can't play. You can't laugh. You can't even smile in the presence of adult. You can't be seen by them. You have to be within the sound of their voice if they call you, but out of sight. It's just total isolation. You are beating regularly, and then the sexual abuse, for example, is always there. For girls, it's a lot worse because those girls, they call them la poussa, which means here for that. That means, you know,
sex.
Anybody can use these girls. But you are the first one to get up in the morning. The minute you get up, you empty the chamber pot, you sweep the yard, you go to the market, you fetch water, you prepare everybody's baths, you set the table, but you can't eat with the family. You're not allowed to because you're inferior. And you do everything. In the afternoon, you wash their feet if they're sitting under the tree drinking coffee or whatever. You're just there to serve them. You don't speak to them. You're not allowed to have a conversation with anybody in the homes. In other words, and you don't go to school. You walk their children to school in the morning, and in the afternoon you go to the school to go pick up their children. You're just not a person.
So how did you get to where you are right now?
Well, when I was I don't know my age. Like I said, I don't know my birthday. I was
never had a birthday party.
Never had a birthday. When I was,
you don't know what your birth is. It's about you. You do not know when you were born because you're a nothingness.
You're not.
There's no need to celebrate or memorialize anything in your life.
No, because you know, kids like myself, Westervec children, the government does not issue a birth certificate to those kids. Birth certificates have to be purchased. So if you are too poor to have one, so you don't have one. So you don't know when you were born. You don't have a birthday. So when I was about, I would say between 15 and 17, I was smuggled into the United States because the family, it was a family of five, and they needed me in New York. They came to New York to continue being their slaves. And after a few months, they realized that it was against the law not to send a minor to school. So they sent me to school. And for the first time in my life, I was spending a full day at school, so the chore at the house, you know, was not being done, so they kicked me out. Because we don't bond. They don't bond with you, so it's easier for them to say, well, get out of my house if they don't, you know, need you. So I started sleeping at laundromats. The teachers, I told a couple of teachers about my situation. They tutored me. They helped me get on welfare. And
here you are.
Yeah.
Amazing.
What about spiritually? Where would you say you are spiritually right now?
Well, when I look at a country like Haiti, about 3 million people, 9 million people, and you have 500,000 slave children, it's hard to believe that there was a God, for God to allow this to happen. Recently, I saw a movie called Call and Response, and then I look at little girls, 7, 8 years old, in brothels in Cambodia, and that made me sick. And I asked myself, where is God in all this? Why can't... I know people have free choices, and I thought maybe God could turn off a switch in somebody's, in, you know, in people's brain to prevent them from doing these things. So I'm not there yet as far as really believing.
You're not a Christ follower.
I'm not a Christ follower, but I'm getting close.
you know what's great about that? What's great about that is, his example, he's a part of the team around here, he's growing, and we're ecstatic where you are, and when I'm ecstatic, actually I'm not ecstatic where you are, I want you to get further. So
I will be.
But it's great that we don't force anybody around here to mouth certain religious words or check something off the box in order to fit in because you believe to a certain thing. That, I mean, I think it's great that you're here and you make people like you make Crossroads happen.
Wow, now, thank you.
Let's look one little picture. What you guys have done with Dina. Check out Dina right now coming out of your foundation and your work with her. Look at her. Yeah, that's what love does. That's what love does. Now, Joan, you are a follower of Jesus, been one for a long time. Just give us the final word here. What is it that you'd like us to know? What is it you'd like us to... Just anything. Final 2%. We actually have a website we're going to pop up there right now. Just give us the final words here.
Well, it's easy to change a child's life in Haiti. We have a sponsorship program. The difference in ours is that we also have child advocates that are trained and they go out and they meet with these children on a regular basis. But, you know, more than that, too, is just the involvement in this church and what it has provided for me personally and for my family. And I love so much being a part of this community. And I love the fact that you don't just talk about Jesus. You go out and you allow people to experience who Jesus is. And to me, that's such a profound way to show people who Jesus is. And so much of what you do impacts not only individual lives here, but this community that I live in and this world that I'm a part of. And I'm so grateful and I'm so happy to invest in what goes on here. And I just would love to encourage everybody to jump in and be a part. And I can't think of a better investment than Crossroads.
Man.
Hey, let's encourage these guys right now. They just have really put themselves on the line. God, I'm thankful for Jean Robert. I'm thankful for Joan. I'm thankful for they're part of our community. They make Crossroads a better place, and you're making them better people by the spirit that's being unleashed here. I pray that their foundation would grow. I pray that they would free more slaves. I pray that more people would get engaged in their work. Thank you that we get to have a hand in it in some way. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Awesome. One more left. You got one more. You got to. Hey, let's go ahead and go ahead, take a seat. You got one more. You're good. This gets a little wearying after all these, isn't it?
I know.
You never know exactly what they're going to say. New things have popped up each time. In the book of 2 Timothy, chapter 3, verse 16 to 17, it says this: all scripture is God-breathed, useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness, so that all God's people may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. We're trying to thoroughly equip all of us, because what God's doing is equipping us for good work. A good work in the business world, a good work in the school, a good work in our houses, a good work in our neighborhood, a good work in a different country. Whatever that work is, there's stuff out there that we want to encourage all of us to be our best at. So why don't we stand right now? And we did the song earlier, and it's a great way to end our time. It's inviting God's kingdom, God's preferred reality, to come in fullness and power inside of our life and inside the world in which we revolve.